So today our guest is Cal Tinsley. He owns Tinsley Performance here in Birmingham. Now, Cal is a local guy. Went to Hillcrest, went to Shelton Baseball at University of Alabama. We'll go on his journey of how he worked in lawn care and then also how he owns a massive business here that trains athletes, anywhere from the middle school athlete all the way up to the professional baseball player, football player, golfer. Cal, thanks for being here.
Come on with it. All right. Thank you very much.
So Cal and I are friends, which makes this a lot harder to talk about because a lot of the information that he is going to give us, I already know. And when you're talking to somebody and you already know the information, sometimes it's hard. But there are all these intricacies that we don't even understand and know that I didn't even know before you walked in here, which I think is going to be great. So give me the little background. We talked about you're from Tuscaloosa. So give me a little background of, like, you know, growing up, playing sports, and then how we got here.
Yeah, so all the way back to grew up in Tuscaloosa, went to Hillcrest High School, played all the sports through middle school, realized I was short and white, so like basketball probably not a thing.
Yep.
So we go baseball, football, realized again, same thing. I'm like, let's stick to baseball. So after my junior year, stuck with just baseball. I actually played golf a little bit in middle school because that was the first year. They did not have baseball, so that was a spring sport and played that seventh grade. First year we had eighth grade, played there. And then, so was pretty good at Hillcrest, was on a really good team, had a bunch of guys
middle
go
D1. Middle infielder, what'd you play?
Yeah, middle infield. So yeah. I was actually second base till our second baseman got finished with basketball, and I switched over to third. And so that allowed me to be a little bit more of a utility guy.
Yeah.
Never played outfield. Then go to Shelton State, walked on over there. Had a couple of opportunities out of high school, schools I didn't want to go to. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to stay at the house.
So let me go over that. I got a 16-year-old that's talking about colleges right now. Why did you choose not to go somewhere that you were, quote, wanted as opposed to going there?
Yeah, so, I mean, the transfer portal wasn't like a thing back then. So, like, you're committing to a school for 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, you're
and,
right.
And so the schools that were recruiting me, I didn't necessarily want to – I felt like I was better than those schools.
Okay.
And if I wasn't at this point, I was going to work my tail off to get to a point
there.
To where I was going to beat out somebody in the starting lineup.
Yep.
And so I was actually – they had two tryouts at Shelton. They had like a 1 o'clock tryout, which is like guys that are going to make the team. And then I was at like 6 p.m.
Yeah, sure.
Did well there, made the team. Coach Sproul told me my hands were too slow to be in the infield. Kind of like the turning points with my baseball
career.
My
hands were too slow to be in – I don't understand what that means.
Like frying pan hands. He didn't feel like I could field a ground ball and be good with it after the ball got to me, whether it's turning two or throwing it to first base. And so I stuck that in my back pocket for a little while. Me and the partner that I threw with every day, we would always win like the little fast hand drill every day. But that was – I mean, you can't like rebuke like a coach when they say
coach,
that to your face.
Yeah.
We moved to outfield and got a starting role. It's kind of like every other game kind of deal my sophomore year. We went to Grand Junction both years, so like made it to the World Series with Shelton in 07 and 08. In 08, we lost in the championship game. So, like,
holy crap. So
runners
really,
up.
Really
in
good
the,
team.
Yeah, I mean, really good team. That was kind of a different time for me because it's like, do I continue to try to play baseball after that? I mean, I didn't get it recruited by another 4 year, but we had five guys on our team that were about to go play at Bama. And so they're like
– And at that time, Bama was pretty good in baseball.
09 and 10.
Yeah.
So good, not great. So anyways, they're on the team. And that was that, like, do I just hang my hat at the end of my career, going to the World Series and hitting a ball off the wall, like just the whole thing?
Yeah.
Or do I end my career like getting cut at a tryout?
Mm.
Like, and so it was really just like a gut check for me.
Sure.
So I had a couple of guys that were really Clay Jones, a guy I roomed with at Shelton, and he was going to Bama, and he was like, Cal, like, I think you can make this happen.
Right.
And so he was like, you need
That's
to at
awesome.
Least give it a shot.
That's good encouraging.
Yeah, I did it. And so that kind of led me to this decision that I made to, like, I'm going to do everything that I can. Like, there's not going to be anything I can control that will make me not – be accepted on this tryout. So again, like, growing up, I worked with my dad in the landscape and lawn care business. He ran that for 40, 45 years. Actually just sold that, praise Jesus, this past year. I know what hard work looks like. I know what 110 degrees laying side, digging ditches, being on the wrong end of a shovel my whole life.
Yeah,
and so that's why I'm doing strength and conditioning now. Fortunate enough to finally have some AC in our facility.
Yeah.
So, like, trying to get
that's
away
awesome.
From the 110. But I remember vividly in our backyard, we had probably 200-300 yards worth of just kind of a grassy lane back there, a bunch of equipment back there. So I would get finished with with work over the summer. I'd be in my work boots, jeans, and I'm like, I know the conditioning test is 110s. Yeah. So it was a 16-second time frame. It was a one-minute turnover. He had to complete 16 to 18 of those to pass the conditioning test. And so I ended up working back to 120-yard sprints with boots on. It was not even terrain. It was dirt. It was equipment and stuff like that. I mean, I wasn't running around tractors, but had me a lane and measured that to about 120 and made all my times in work boots and jeans.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, if I can do this,
I can make it in shorts and tennis shoes.
Yeah, and when the adrenaline's running and all that. Yeah. So fast forward to the tryouts.
So you had to do the conditioning test at the tryouts?
No, it was when I made the team. So I was foreseeing that I was going to make the team, and I wasn't going to allow anything else to allow them to, like, say Cal ain't in fit and in shape or whatever. And so anyways, made the team. It was me and one other guy. So we actually made 39 and 40 on the roster. That was the first year they cut the roster down to 35. So everybody around the situation was like, you're number 6 and 7 behind, like, where the roster's already get cut. Right. And you're going to have to beat out five guys that are already on the team. And so anyways, I was like, I'll just put my head down. I'm going to work. Yeah. I remember during the conditioning test after I made it for a little bit, because they were going to cut the roster to 35 after the fall.
You get to 40, and then we're going to cut it to 35 in the fall.
Yeah, so you can handle whatever in the fall, and then they got to make a cut going into the spring.
Yeah.
During tryouts, I balled out. It was a Jesus thing. Like, that's probably the best 2 days of baseball I've ever had in my life.
Great.
I played infield because I had tried out for outfield because, remember, Coach Sproul told me that my hands are too slow.
Yeah.
And Coach Wells comes up and is like, hey, guys, anybody want to play
third
infield?
Base,
shortstop, I mean. And so I'm like, okay, obviously he's looking for a backup infielder. So I'm like, I mean, I played my whole life.
Yeah.
Had a little small, like, 11-inch glove that I hadn't used in a couple of years. I go out there and I'm just balling out.
That's great.
It was awesome. Hit a triple off the wall during the during, like, a little scrimmage tryout thing. So I was like, I laid my head on the bed at the end of the night. It was like, if they take anybody from that thing, it's going to be me.
Yeah.
And so made it. Again, everybody's saying, like, this not going to work out. Like, don't get your hopes up.
Sure.
And work boot runs, all that. I remember to this day, Ross Wilson, like, we're like 10 sprints in. I'm beating, I'm toasting everybody.
Yeah.
And he's like, kid, you better slow it down. I'm like, I'm not slowing down.
I'll be fine.
I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be at the head of the pack. Yeah. So, like, I'm going to show that I've prepared for this. And so, anyways, made it. That got cut down. I feel like this is bragging about myself all the time,
good.
But this is just kind of grooving the patterns of, like, how I've developed the character and, I guess, the work ethic. But so that made the 35, made the fall roster. There was a couple of guys that got hurt, and it just worked out.
Yeah.
And then there was a travel roster of 25.
Oh, yeah.
So I made the travel roster of 25.
Oh, man, that's incredible. As a junior.
As a junior, yeah. And so I'm the guy that's first off the bench for every position. So, like, it was – we'd take in and outs of four games, and coach is hitting the outfield. I'd be out in right field or left field. I'm taking fly balls, ground balls.
Outfielders true utility player.
Yeah, outfielders get done. The third baseman would take my other glove, and he'd set it behind him at third. So I'd run in, I'd toss my glove to the side, get my third base, and we'd take in and out for infield. So yeah, I was first off the bench for third, started at second, third, left, right. Played a lot in the SEC, a whole lot compared to what I thought I was going to be able to play. I mean, I grew up in Tuscaloosa. We had season tickets to the football games, season tickets to baseball, back when, like, Andy Phillips, Dax Norris, all those guys, Jeremy Brown.
I played with Jeremy in high school.
All those cats were just hitting. They had -5 bats. They're hitting balls 500 feet.
Oh,
I mean, it's amazing. I'm, like, idolizing these guys. We're sitting four rows up above the dugout, like, my whole life. Never did I think that I was going to be able to wear that jersey and run out on the field to Sweet Home Alabama. But it literally gives me chills thinking about it, just because, I mean, I did bet on myself. A lot of things worked out, but God had his hand on all of it.
Yeah.
And so that was my athletic career.
So when you get done with playing, what did you want to do?
Because I didn't
know. Everybody has in mind, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? There's a few of us out there that say, I want professional baseball. Then there's a few, one of like me, that, like, I knew that I wasn't going to play in the NFL. Like, I figured that out, like, year two.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, that's not who I'm going to be. I'm going to go coach. So what did you want to do when you graduated?
You seen the movie Divergent?
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I fit into a faction.
Sure.
Like, I feel like I am Divergent, and, like, I don't really know if what I'm doing right now is what I mean.
Sure.
I do feel like there's a calling on what we're doing. But,
right.
like, entrepreneurial spirit, all that.
Yeah.
So a little bit of this, I was really good at math. I never had to use a textbook, and then all of a sudden I get to calculus, and that was the first time I'm like, I'm not going to buy the textbook. I've never used a textbook in my life. And then I made like a 45 on our first test. I'm like, maybe not physical therapy. Well, it was started off as construction engineering because I wanted to build things.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to be on the back end of a shovel working in my dad's landscaping business and all that. So I was like, maybe this is a little bit more office. Kind of like, I want to get my feet dirty. Like, I like that, but like, might be a little bit of both and. Failed calculus. Cool. Then I wanted to do physical therapy. Wanted to be around athletes. Realized that was super competitive to be able to train or do therapy on athletes all the time because I wanted to stay around the sport.
Sure.
I didn't necessarily want to coach it. I didn't think. And so being around the sport, physical therapy, and then my senior year at Bama was like a 12-hour internship. So it's practically all day, every day, going to a PT clinic and then going to practice. And it was the worst. It was yellow walls. There was no windows. Was a bunch of old people's knees and hips and low backs. I'm putting a heat pack, ice pack on them. They can't hear nothing because they came from the coal mine. So they're yelling back and forth in between training tables and watching the Price is Right every day. And I'm like, I'm cool with Price is Right, but like a whole semester. And I'm like, this is probably not.
And let me say this. That is why internships are so important. So Sierra, who handles so much for us, and you hear us talk about Sierra almost every time we have an episode, but Sierra's daughter, Zoe, came and interned with us. And I looked at her and I said, hey, look, the most important part of an internship is you either A, figure out that you love this stuff and this is what you want to do, or B, you figure out this sucks.
Yeah.
Both of them are wins.
Huge wins.
Both of them. So the win was an internship that you realized this is not what I want to do for life. Because the worst part is you don't do an internship. You think that PT is an esoteric world where you get paid good money to work on athletes all day, and all of a sudden you're making average money working on, you know, Ethel. You know what I'm saying? So like, you figuring it out in college is a huge win.
That was one of the first times that I saw that a closed door was really good.
Oh, absolutely.
Like a no is outstanding.
Absolutely. All right, so you go to the internship. What did you get your degree in?
Degrees in exercise science, master's in human performance.
So at that point, I'm not going to be a PT. What do I want to do?
So then I graduate with the exercise science degree, and I go to Pine Cove, which is a Christian camp out in Texas. So I worked out at Pine Cove. I went to The Well, which was like student ministry in Tuscaloosa. Random deal. They were set up in the Ferguson Center. I stopped over, and they're like, hey, we're a summer camp. Worked out there for 2 summers, actually. So after my senior year, so we go to Clemson for the Super Regionals. We like lose game one of the regionals. It was kind of crazy how we came back and won at Georgia Tech. Dogpile, that was great. I realize I don't ever need to be at the bottom of a dogpile again. That was bad. So I was in the dugout, wasn't playing. So boom, ball gets hit left field. It's the last out. I'm the first man to the pitcher's mound. I'm tackling him. Yeah. I'm at the bottom of the pile. It was terrible. God. Claustrophobic, all that. So anyways, we're going to Clemson. We win game one like 5-2. Next game we lose like 16-2.
Oh, wow.
They had our pitches. Our pitching coach was their pitching coach the prior year. That's a whole different debacle. But anyways, lost the last game 8-6. Last inning, we're on the home team. Guys on second and third. We hit a fly ball to deep left center. Guy touches the fence and kind of comes back in and catches it.
Wow.
Ball goes another 6 feet. It's a walk-off to Omaha. Mm-hmm. But anyways, so we're finishing that up. So I showed up to camp a couple weeks late doing that. Get a phone call because we can't have our phones during camp. So during the weekend, we have like a 20-hour off per week kind of deal. And got a phone call from our strength coach at Bama. And he was like, hey, I got a GA position. Love for you to be involved. And made that happen. That's got my master's in human performance.
Yep.
And was able to work with baseball as my primary. So I was the head travel strength coach for the baseball team, and then worked with football. I mean, all of them, gymnastics, cross country, swimming and diving, volleyball. I mean, every sport there. That's one of the things at Bama, at least, and it probably is with most other sports. Like, you go get your classwork done, but you're showing up at 5 a.m.
Oh, bro.
You go to class, and then you're there till about 6 or 7 at night.
Being a GA is really, really difficult because you're a full-time coach and you have to go to school. Like, you're there as much as the coaches are. Strength coaches, position coaches, all that stuff. You're
probably
there
more
the
than most because they kind of get their main stuff out of the way and they get to head out.
But no, not you. So, okay, so you, after you're a GA, what do you transition to there?
So, I wanted to talk about one of the things with the GA was like, so I had just played with those guys the previous year, and then everybody minus the seniors that had left, they were on their own team. So I had to transition into a coach within 2 months max. So like May, middle towards the end of May, it ended. And then August, we're rolling. And I got to be leading. So, like, Rocky Colburn was the strength coach that I was mainly under. I was under Cochran and Rocky and TJ and all those guys. But he pushed me into leading the group. So, like, within the first 2 weeks, I'm leading the group, and there's 45 guys out there.
That's awesome.
And it's in the fall. So, like, some of those guys are new. So, they haven't grooved, like, hey, this is what we're doing. Yeah. Kyle's just kind of leading it. I'm, like, actually having to explain exercises, drills, verbally be able to, like, right. communicate, like, hey, foot's behind the line, everybody's facing left, we're about to do this. And, like, so that was probably the most pivotal moment in my life. So now all of our interns and coaches that come in to Tinsley Performance, like, I'm pushing them into that pretty early.
Sure.
To expose where their weaknesses are yeah. for themselves personally. I'm going to be there. It's like, I'm not going to let them fail, but I want them to know, like kind of post-action plan of, like, we had athletes looking all kind of different ways, and we're doing karaoke.
Yeah.
And we got folks doing stuff all over the place. So, like, being able to communicate, be in front of the team, be in front of a group, and, like, lead them and make sure right. everything's unified and we're rolling in the right direction. So, like, that was really, really good for me. I hated it. I mean, you're talking about the stress of that. Like, you're going through a master's program. You're stressed because it's, like, all that's new, and I'm trying to, like, be a coach now and not a teammate, and how do I be a friend and a coach?
Yeah.
And then
it's difficult being in there and doing it at the place. I was a GA at a place I didn't play, so it was a little bit more easy.
Yeah.
It was easier for me, but you're playing with these guys in the hotel room, and then all of a sudden you're leading them.
The best thing was my work ethic was better than anybody's anyways. I mean, look at me, I'm not a huge guy, so like I had to work harder and pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
So they couldn't use that against me. Like, oh, Cal, like, didn't he work hard last year? Now he's trying to tell us to get after it and put our hand behind the line and squat lower and all that kind of stuff. So it was an easy transition from that regard, but it was still tough. It was still tough.
Sure. All right, so you get done with being a GA. What do you do?
Yeah, so during that process, it's funny, the same guy who had told me and my parents, like, hey, you're probably not going to make the team, he was the liaison between a few pro ball teams and finishing their degrees. So, like, Braves, Royals, Indians, a few more. So, like, those guys finish their career in baseball, or during their career, they have contracts. Within their contract is, like, hey, you can finish your college degree if you get drafted prior to your graduation.
Right.
So he was that guy. So he had some connections. And so I'm like, I love baseball. I'm obviously in strength conditioning. I think I'd love to do the pro ball route. And so I got a job with the Atlanta Braves for a year, and that was amazing. Went down to Orlando, was at the Wide World of Sports working there.
Yep.
And then short season, went to Danville, Virginia with the short season team.
Okay.
So I'm living kind of with the coaching staff there and coaching probably 80% Dominicans, and then Americans, guys that just got drafted from like TCU, Georgia, all these other teams. The language barrier was there, the ethnic, like, just like
all of it,
culture,
yeah,
everything. And also, like, riding on a bus in the middle of West Virginia going to and from games, and guys getting, like, lice in hotel rooms and stuff like that.
Sure.
It was like, it's not super glorious.
10 times and, worse than what it was at Bama. Bama was, you travel.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Staying. All
so yeah, it's just wild. And that lifestyle was something I didn't want to do moving forward. Actually had, after that year, had five different job opportunities in that off season. Crazy story. Turned down all five to get one job. It was at, like, a CrossFit type gym here locally that was going to open up another spot. Turned them down on a Friday. Monday was supposed to get the job offer and sign the paperwork. Monday shows up. Hey, we're actually not opening up that other location. I'm sorry, but, like, we don't have a job. I'm like,
what?
This is great.
Yeah.
So anyways, like, that conversation was a pretty pivotal moment in, like, my professional career, because very, very upset about that. The guy that was, like, leading over, like, the interview process completely dropped the ball. In the back of my mind, I'm like, this is good. I'm very upset. But, like, I knew
what's
that it was going to work out.
Yeah.
Right. Called the Braves back. They opened up another position for me. It was, like, a coordinator position. So I went down there a second year and worked mainly with the rehab guys. So, like, the big league guys and AA, AAA that were coming down for 60-day IL, they would be doing therapy, and I would do their strength and conditioning away from the targeted area.
Right.
So, like, shoulder up. I mean, we're doing all lower half programs, cardio. Physical therapist does all the arm care. Right. That was where I realized that the whole, like, stay in your lane was kind of a thing.
Sure.
I don't believe that's very good at this point, but at that point in time in 12 and 13, it was stay in your lane.
Yeah.
We're going to have meetings about things, but don't talk about nutrition to this cat. Don't talk about therapy. You just do strength conditioning. That's it. And the role I'm in now, it's like, we're doing everything.
All of it.
Now, I'm not putting hands on, I'm doing actual manipulations with therapy. We have a therapist in house that does that, but you got to have a little bit of all of it and have those conversations in the private sector. So yeah, knew that I didn't want to do that moving forward. Yeah. I mean, the I'm talking to the head other like coaches with pitching and hitting and all that, and they're like, Cal, it's not. I mean, even if you make it to the big league level, it's, instead of riding a bus, you're flying in a bus in the air. So like, it's a plane. It's more like you're staying in a Four Seasons, but like it's the same thing. You're away from your family. You're all that
all the time.
And so the coaches that I was coaching with, they were having to paint houses and cut yards in off season to still make ends meet. And I'm not doing that. I'm gonna start my own thing. And if it's up to me, we're going to make it happen.
Right.
And if I fail, I fail.
Sure. So where do
you
go from there?
That's going to be on me. So moved back home. During that second year, my mom texted me like, hey, I got this girl you need to meet. And she's doing worship guides with me at Highlands in Tuscaloosa. I'm like, hey, mom, you've said that about every halfway decent looking girl at church.
Yeah.
So I met her during the All-Star break, messaged her on Facebook, and then come back home. We started dating, and then – Jess is now my wife of 10 awesome. Years. We have 4 kids and we're rolling. And that's I met incredible. Her at church. My mom set us up.
Perfect.
So a lot of check marks before we even really started dating. So that happened. Told her on our first date, like I'm going to open up my own strength and conditioning facility at some point. Literally vividly remember that. She reminds me of that very often. So started to go that route. So I went Champion Sports Medicine for 5 years working under the Andrews Clinic. So I was the director of strength conditioning in the back of a PT clinic, which was kind of a weird hybrid between both roles I thought I was going to be in.
Yeah.
But you can't really get after it when you got a person that just had a total knee replacement and they're just kind of sitting over that training table 10 feet from you.
Yeah.
Can't really get the music all hype and like – And so, but that's when Kendall Graveman started working with me. That's when Trey Mullinax started working with me. So I started getting some clout behind my name as far as having big leaguers and PGA guys that are.
So how did those guys, so use Kendall for example. Kendall's one of my best friends. You're great friends with you too. How did a pro athlete like those guys find you?
So that was Trey's mom worked upstairs in HR with Andrew's clinic. Okay. I had worked with Trey because I'd worked with him at Bama and he was with the Justin Thomas and Corey Whitsitt and Bobby White, all that whole crew. Whenever he turned pro, he was right there. His mom was upstairs, and we kind of made that mutual connection. Sure. And he was like, I'm not really training anywhere. I don't really know where to go, so let's do it. And then Kendall was really good friends with him because they were both living in Gardendale. And so Kendall and Trey would get each other up in the morning. If he's watching this, so Kendall would get Trey up in the morning, have a biscuit ready for him, and he's like, we're going to workouts.
That's right.
If it was up to Trey, it would be kind of once or twice a week.
That's right.
So if you know anything about Kendall Graveman, like he gets after it.
He does.
And so anyways, they started with me, and then that was I wanted to be done with Champion in 6 months. 5.5 years later, I was still there building relationships, and it was really good to start to understand the injury side of the sports. Mm-hmm. I'd never been in that role because I'd never just stay in your lane, right? So like now it's a little bit of both because I'm liaison between the therapy and the return to play and. Worked with ASMI really closely, so they do all the. They started the wearable sensors, American Sports Medicine Institute. They started
Mormon High School. Kevin Wilk.
Yeah, so they started the whole. Glenn Fleissig started the wearable sensors for that you see like video games, and they're doing all the stuff. Baseball pitchers would come in, get evaluated from them. They would walk next door to me, and I would do their physical assessment, and then we'd meet and talk about like, hey, based off of how you move, based off of how you throw, this is a program that needs to happen moving forward.
Correct.
And so now we're doing all that in-house at Tensla Performance. So all that was kind of there. I wanted to start my own thing for a while. A local guy that had a strength conditioning facility reached out because of a local connection I had with a high school I was training. And he was like, I think this guy's looking for a guy to run his next location. And so we met up. Started working there.
Yep.
That was outstanding because I was kind of on my way to start my own spot with
it kind
a
of
franchise
a
location.
Yeah. Like I got out of coaching, worked at a church. It was my holdover job. And then I started our own thing. So like same thing. Happens all the time.
Yeah. So that was it. And then so I was there for 7 months. And then
started Tensla Performance.
Yeah. So a meeting got called kind of by me, kind of by him. Like, hey, we need to have some conversations. This isn't running very well.
Yeah.
I practically got fired from my current position there and then offered like a very entry level position at the same spot. Like, hey, we lost this amount of money. I'm kind of taking that away and shifting things around and I'm going to be the director. And now we still want you as a coach. And I'm like, you just fired me from that job. I'm not here for
not
that.
Gonna do that.
And so in that meeting, I mean, I felt the Holy Spirit saying like, this is all good. This is great.
This is your time.
I didn't go into that meeting thinking that was going to happen at all. We're 4 weeks away from my daughter being born. That was our first child.
Oh.
And so the man in you is like, you have to provide. Like, you better step it up. And so I vividly remember in his office telling him, thank you, this is going to be great for me. Like, God's promised that we're going to go from glory to glory. Right. I firmly believe that. He's not taking me this far just to take me this far. And the next step's going to be good. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be across the street competing against you or if I'm going to be running my dad's landscape and lawn care company. Like, but something's going to happen.
Yeah, sure.
Probably going to start with the strength conditioning route unless that fails. So just kind of plan for that. And so left that meeting, nervous, scared, fired up, excited, all of it. Kid on the way. And so I
have so many exciting things.
Yeah.
So tell me this. So tell me, you've got a wonderful facility over in the Pelham area. Give me the 30-second version of what you do at Tinsley Performance and who, what you do and who you coach.
Yeah, we train athletes physically, mentally, and spiritually through the avenue of performance training. We coach coaches, so we give team programs and allow the coach to have a world-class program at their fingertips without creating chaos in their weight room. Individual athletes, we maximize their God-given potential through data and analysis and hard work in the weight room and creating the roadmap for them to succeed.
So anything from middle schoolers to professional athletes?
7 years old to the 10-year vet.
Perfect. Yep. So, like, you've got multiple pro athletes. Kendall's trained there for forever. Trey, there's multiple guys there that also high school kids. So you've got how many high school teams do you
47 teams.
So in that program, you've programmed for 47 different high school teams, whether it be soccer, baseball, basketball, football, whatever, all over the state of Alabama.
12 sports, 47 teams, 23 actual schools.
That's amazing. Okay, yeah. So then, but also you have people that come in. So like my daughter, Jonna, comes in once, twice, three times a week, and she trains in there, program all her stuff, all that stuff. One of the things that they do that I loved is there's an assessment. Hey, we got to figure out who you are, what's great, what's broken, and then we want to fix from there. That's really the model that I saw as a parent / client, so that you could see where we need to, I hate to say it like this, where we need to fix Jonna.
Yeah.
My daughter who's a volleyball
player. So she's an elite volleyball player, but she had a bunch of asymmetries in her lower half, and she jumps all the time.
Right.
It's like that could be a significant issue.
Sure.
Knee going in valgus position, toes playing out, ankle kind of rolling in whenever she squatted. I think she kind of knew that, but it's like, okay, why is she doing that?
Right.
And so it's one of those things where we want to make sure if you're redlining in their vehicle and like your RPMs are out the roof and like it's like, when's the straw going to break the camel's back kind of thing? Like, we need to get people back towards the middle. Now, there's elite athletes that are designed certain ways and their stiffness creates elite attributes. So like, we want to make sure that we expose that and like, is this something we need to change? Is it not? And so now we have the data to prove, based off of all the athletes we've trained, the studies that we've done, you're moving this way, all your peers are moving the other way, and if you keep moving this way, I'm never going to tell you you're going to get injured. With what we've seen, it can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, again, from the PT background and working with the doctors who are doing surgeries every single day, I don't want you to be in that position, and you don't know what that position feels like, and your parents don't know what that position feels like until you actually get there. And the parents are like, I kind of knew that this was a thing, but like, my kid was always kind of good. I felt like they were okay in the weight room, and all of a sudden, you're like down for 9 months.
Yep.
We've kind of done the sports thing our whole kid's life, and like now it can't happen. So like, our job is to not know how many injuries we saved.
That's wonderful.
So like, that's exposing limitations, force plate data, wearable sensors, all that, and saying, this is the roadmap that needs to happen. And like you were talking about earlier, like, hey, you don't need to go this route. Like, for pitchers, if you can pronate well, you can throw a good changeup.
Right.
If you can't pronate well, probably not going to be an effective pitch. Now we know you can seam shift some things and you throw it the opposite direction and it does whatever you're trying to get to do. So it's super complicated, but we know now that we need to get you to say no to that pitch or that direction or that swing path or that, hey, we're just not going to be that fast and explosive athlete. We have data now to prove if you're a more force-driven athlete, you need to train this way. If you're a more speed-driven, high-strong race car athlete, we're going to train you differently because that's going to maximize your attributes that a scout, a coach, a team's going to want.
Sure.
Rather than being kind of mediocre at both.
One of my questions is this. What is the biggest mistake young athletes make?
Biggest mistake that they make is, one, thinking that they're working hard enough, thinking that they're better than they are. The great philosopher Denzel Washington says, don't confuse movement with progress.
Yeah.
Just because we're moving, just because we're training, just because we're working out doesn't mean there's progress. Like, we went and trained a school yesterday or tested them. A kid runs a sprint. We're doing max velocity sprints. So we have lasers set up. We tell them how fast they just ran. I wasn't running the group, but I know that they yelled out the number. Say it was like 18 miles an hour. The kid just ran. He comes back. Our coach is like, you weren't even getting after it. Like, what are you – like, the intent needs to be max.
All I got.
This is a test. Yeah. We're maxing out. He runs again 19 miles an hour. If you know anything about sprint speed, a mile an hour is a lot. I mean, you're looking at guys elite of the elite running 22 miles an hour, 23. Yeah. So, like, the percentage there is kind of crazy.
Sure.
I mean, he just jumped at least 5% of speed in, yeah, like, just one sprint. Obviously, he didn't get faster. He just ran faster.
Ran,
like,
faster.
Yeah, his intent was high. Knowing that, like, we train the elite of the elite, we train guys that have been playing pro golf, pro NFL, PGA, MLB for 10 plus years, we know their attributes. Like, they're freaks anyways.
Yeah.
They're working harder than everybody. You're not a freak. You're not that guy.
Sure.
But you think you're working hard, but you're,
but
like,
you're really not. So, yeah, so I guess that leads my next question is, so you've trained so many different guys at so many different sports. What separates elite from average?
Allowing us to coach the details. So that means if I'm average, mm-hmm, I haven't done the research. I don't really know my body enough. I don't really know how to go fast under the barbell. I don't know what mobility screens look like. I don't know what good technique is on my sprint form. All of the information is there for you.
Like, you got to be able to listen to the little things.
You got to do the mundane and do that every single day and not want something different.
Sure.
And then we can actually coach the details because you've grooved in good patterns. Like, the movement's good. Like, right, we have a guy that's going to go to Tennessee. He's a speed guy. And so, like, every time he comes in, we're working on speed development. He committed out of, like, ninth grade. So, like, they had their eyes on him early. He's a 6'3", 6'4", runner for his 60-yard sprint. Like, that's
a baseball player?
That's moving, yeah.
Wow.
Every time he comes in, he wants to work on sprint technique. He is an elite sprinter. But we're working on, like, ground contact time. We're working on, does he get a little bit more of a vertical force instead of horizontal force
during
his drive
phase? You're working on level 10, whereas, like, someone, Jonna comes in, you're working on level 1.
Yeah,
level
2. And I was talking to our staff yesterday about this. It's like, those guys who are elite, I mean, it's like laser-focused eye contact, almost to the point where I'm like, okay, I kind of have to look away. And you almost get intimidated as a coach. Like, I'm giving them information. They are retaining every single thing that I say. So I got to be on my P's and Q's and give them the information. That's what keeps me up at night. Guys that really want it, they know that we're the elite providers of what they want out of their body,
right,
their mechanics, all that, and then making sure that we're maximizing that potential.
So height, weight, foot speed is a big deal with all sports. What's the most underrated skill that a successful athlete has?
I think it's the mundane.
Being able to – it's like my dad used to always say, I'd rather be bored than be beat.
And bored's a thing. Like, my kids nowadays, I mean, they're, dude, my oldest is 6 or 7, but like, Daddy, I'm bored. I'm like, that's good.
That's – yeah, it's the way it's
You're
going
to start to come up with games on your own. Sure. You're going to start doing other stuff.
That's
like,
right.
Go outside and be bored. That's great.
So as you're training these kids, how do you train the mental part?
I kind of go the reverse route.
Okay.
So one of the ways that I'll do that is somebody will be doing – a lift or something, and I'll just walk next to him and like, you can stop, as you're good. You've done enough today, you're fine. Or like, hey, the world needs mediocre people too. And like, to somebody who's trying to get after it, like, yeah, that probably pisses you off. If you're an athlete and you're up under the bar and you're kind of struggling, but I know you got a couple more reps left, and you hear like, you're good, you just rack it, it's fine. Mm. Nah, the bar ain't getting racked.
Yeah.
Or it exposes, like, if they racked that, I'm like, dude, what are we doing? And then having that conversation of,
that's
like, where are we at? And so
almost like a test.
Yeah, and so what I love, I mean, the elite guys that want to get after it, I'll just kind of walk past them like, you can stop now.
You're good, bro.
You've given enough, yeah.
Okay.
And then I'll just randomly in the weight room, hey, guys, the world needs mediocre people too.
Yeah.